slow down, flip us over, and celebrate. The Turn Turtles are here.
Yay!
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 Winter is coming and it's time to burrow in the mud to hibernate. What's the most necessary supply for a hibernating turtle? Board games, of course. I'm Meej, and with me are my three co-hosts. Adam, how are you this week?
I am so good. How are you?
And you, Matt?
I'm doing great.
Andrew?
Just swell. Thanks for asking. How are you, Meej?
Oh, I'm pretty good. I'm pretty good.
And how are you,
Meej? Have any fun? Oh, I'm pretty good. I'm pretty good. Anyone have some fun highlights from the week?
Let's all talk at once.
Matt? Yeah.
Oh, it's me first.
Matt, what were your highlights?
Well, the first weekend, since we record every 2 weeks, my first weekend, I brought my kids to the in-laws, and Hannah and I got a weekend away. We got some board gaming in, which was great. And it was a trip to highlight our 6th anniversary, which is yesterday.
Hooray!
At the time of recording, not at the time of release. But at the time of release, Happy New Year!
Almost.
Not quite.
Shouldn't it be like the next day?
Oh, big fail.
It's New Year's Eve, isn't it?
Yeah.
When this comes out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that counts.
Oh, okay.
Obviously, everyone Happy listens New the Year! Second this is uploaded.
Woo!
How was your week, Andrew?
Pretty uneventful. Didn't get up to too much. Didn't play too many board games. I was too busy playing Final Fantasy XIV. But yeah, pretty uneventful. Mostly just looking forward to the holidays, and I'll get lots of time in to play some games with the kids then, and do some sleeping in. That's going to be sweet too.
Mm. Mm-hmm. What is that like?
One day that'll return to you. As soon as they can all figure out how to use the remote, then they just go downstairs and turn the TV on, and then they realize the longer they let you sleep, the more cartoons they get to watch.
Genius. And Adam, how was your Fortnite?
Pretty good. Not too eventful as well. My kids have been getting various colds, and we've been just getting through the last couple weeks of a pregnancy over here, so we're in sort of hunker down mode for the most part, but we played some games. I actually backed a few things for the first time in many years, which I'll get to later.
Ooh.
And that's exciting.
Nice. Yeah, my week was pretty, 2 weeks, I guess, were pretty low key. I just worked a whole bunch, too much, I might say. But that was great. Played a bunch of board games, as always, 5 or 6 different games.
Which ones?
We'll talk about them all. They're coming up. Yeah, I played a lot. I don't even think I listed them all because there were too many, and Matt played a bunch with me. So, anyways, that jumps right into what we've been playing, which is why you asked me that, Matt. I see that now. You're much better at transitions than me, apparently. All right. So I'm going to start. I mentioned this game a few times, Maglev Metro by Bizarre, I don't know how to say that, games, designed by Ted Alspach. Our friend Daryl and I played this as a two-player game. I played it with more players, and I find it much more complicated. It was very fun as a two-player game because it was just tile laying, making train tracks, making subway tracks across the board, and that was quite nice as a two-player game. Got to play it with the replacement robot pieces that were made more colorblind friendly, and they actually work quite well. They're a darker color, so they're easier to tell the difference.
Nice. Yeah, so as a two-player game, you said it's easier just because it gives you more space to kind of play your tracks and not have to worry about what the other guys do, and you kind of have your own space to build out from and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So does that take away...
In Maglev, the whole point is that you never actually have to worry about where someone else's tracks are. So it's really cool. The pieces are transparent. So all 4 colors, when you lay them down, they line up side by side so anyone can go anywhere.
Oh, neat.
And if you imagine what a subway map looks like in your head, where it has all the lines, that's what the board looks like.
Okay.
It's more, you're fighting, it has a pick up and deliver element. That's the main mechanic.
Oh, I see.
So you're fighting less over what you're picking up and bringing back to the stations.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, it does scale how many robots and passengers are out to pick up with two players, but it's still just
a little bit easier.
And,
yep. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And I enjoyed it that way. I'll talk a little bit more about that one later. I think I wrote it down somewhere. The other game, we had our family gift exchange. So we don't pick names or anything. We just do an exchange with all my siblings and my parents. And I got Pictionary Air, released by Mattel, by Jeff Bizarko and Damon Sadler. Honestly, I see these games and I think that's just a gimmick. They're just trying to steal my money and I'm not going to touch that. But I got it for Christmas. It is so fun. Think about Pictionary.
Are you just drawing
you
in the air with your finger?
With a wand, essentially. Okay. But yeah. So it has
like
this
a sparkler?
Little wand and you press...
Oh, that's a good idea.
Pardon?
Like a sparkler? Like when you're out of...
No.
And it leaves the line
Oh, that's
behind.
So much better, though.
No, I wish.
It comes with a pack of sparklers, then you have to buy more?
Yeah.
No. I'll post a picture of what it looks like, but it's basically a wand, and it has a little LED on the end. Mm-hmm. And when you press the button, it turns from red to green. And when it's green, and you're pointing at a phone or a tablet camera, it tracks where it's going and displays on the TV screen what you're drawing.
Oh.
So it's essentially just Pictionary.
Mm-hmm.
But what it does is it really levels the playing field because nobody is good at drawing in the air when they can't see what they're drawing. So it just, it's hilarious. And it's just... I don't know. It might wear off,
yeah.
But the initial play was so fun because you're just trying to figure out how the heck to do this.
Your initial impression kind of rings with me, just that it seems gimmicky right off the...
Yeah.
But
it is 100% gimmicky. But yeah, it was fun. I played Camel Up for the first time.
First time!
By Eggert Spiel, Stephen Bogan. Yeah, I've never got to
play this
game.
Oh, this game's so great.
Yeah, it's a fun one.
Me and our friend John played it just two-player. It's not meant for two-player, but we did. It just makes it a lot more random. Ridiculously fun. I love it that the camels stack up on each other.
Yep.
And that there's some camels that pull them backwards in the race. Just, I laughed so hard. And then the other game I played that I wrote down was Photosynthesis. So this is one of my favorite games. It's by Blue Orange, by Hjalmar Hatch. It is one of the prettiest games I've played and one of the most mind-melting games I've played. You're basically growing trees on a map and they cast shadows on each other. And if shadows are cast on your tree, it can't gain you points that allow you to grow more trees. Huh. Very hard to explain.
It is a very thinky game.
Again, it is so thinky. You open it and you think it's going to be a relaxing zen chill.
Yeah.
No, you're going to think the hardest you've ever thought in your life and it's going to hurt. But it is wonderful.
Cool.
Yeah, so that's most of what I played. Matt, what about you?
Well, Hannah and I finally found Sleeping Gods by Ryan Lockett and Red Raven Games. And that's a cooperative
exciting
exploration and mostly storytelling game where you can you got nine explorers that are divided between whoever's playing, and then you pretty much choose what to do, sail your ship around the map. There's a whole bunch of maps that you can sail around, and you go to a certain number that's labeled on the map and usually has an art asset with it, so like a little cottage that might say 10. Then you get there. You go to number 10 in the big storybook and you read it. It might have some skill challenges or a fight to do, that kind of thing. And then you're hoping to find, with a two-player game, six items. They're not idols, I don't think, but it's something to that effect. And then if you do, you wake up the gods that brought you there and they send you home again. And so we played a little bit of that on our weekend away, and that was a lot of fun. We're going to get it for Christmas, so don't tell me.
Okay.
Oh, spoilers.
And then I finally picked up Innovation and Space Base from someone in Hamilton, and we played Innovation 3 times, and it is by Carl Chudiak and Asmati Games. It is a card-driven tech tree game, and the cool thing about it is each card feels powerful, but then some cards feel like supremely powerful. Like it's weird. No card in itself feels like, oh, this is a normal card. Every card you get, you're like, oh, this could be cool. But some of them feel like they're game breaking. So the game is divided into 10 eras, starting with prehistory and ending in the information age or whatever. And then you can earn different achievements by having a certain amount of points, and each card can be used in different ways, whether it's for the power on it, whether you want to score points with it, or different things. So it's very fun. We enjoyed it a lot and hope to play it soon. We also played Space Base and Kalos, but I'll leave those till later.
All right, Andrew, what have you been playing?
Not a whole lot. I did manage to get a couple games of King Domino in with the kids yesterday. That's by Bruno Cathala and published by Blue Orange. And King Domino is a fun little game. Doesn't take too long to play, but 15 minutes or so to...
Good game.
Yeah, 15 minutes or so to play a round, and you're just... Think of dominoes, but instead of dominoes, you have different terrain types that you're building into a 5x5 grid to make your kingdom. And you're trying to match up your fields or your water places and get as many crowns in those places. So some of the dominoes will have crowns on them, and then your points at the end of the round are going to multiply the number of crowns you have in a section multiplied by the number of squares that are the same color, essentially. And it's just a simple little game, but the kids really enjoy it, and it's a fun one to get to the table. And so we put
another pretty game.
Yeah, very mm-hmm. pretty game. The tiles are
all Blue Orange games that I've seen are very pretty.
Yeah, they're really nice and chunky tiles, and they're fun to play with. We do have the expansion as well, but we didn't play that one this time.
I've always wanted to buy, you can get King Domino XL, so it's giant pieces.
Very cool.
It sounds so good. It's the exact same thing, it's just big.
Yeah,
neat. Like a foot by foot dominoes. A foot by two.
I would
feet.
Hope so, but I'm not sure. That box would be huge, like Gloomhaven size.
Yeah. And other than that, we played Everdell on Friday as well, but we'll talk to that when we talk about our main topic.
Nice. Adam, what have you been up to?
Jess and I played a little bit more of Captain Carcass, and then... Carcass, I think is how it's pronounced.
Cape Dane.
And then... on the Facebook page a while ago, I posted a poll looking to, as I often am, looking for people's recommendations on two-player games. And I did not grab one that was even listed on that poll by the end of it after my research, but I ended up getting this game called Lost Cities. And I was really surprised this didn't make the list after I discovered it. It's often cited as the couple's, what is it called? The couple's masterpiece, or like the ultimate game for couples or something like this. Have you guys played Lost Cities?
I haven't played it, but I've definitely heard of it.
So I grabbed it, but then I accidentally grabbed a four-player version because it looks exactly the same, and that's apparently not nearly as good, so I had to return it. But then by the time I got this one, we played it, and it's this cool little almost solitaire in a sort of archaeological setting where you have to play... cards, and you have to play your cards in a descending order, so 7, 8, 9. But there's a little board that really only shows you where your tiles are, and each time you put a card down, you're starting an expedition, and then you're immediately down negative 20 points to like invest in the dig, so to speak. And then you need to dig your way up out of that hole, no pun intended. And it's clear what your opponent's trying to do, so then you're trying to hold back cards that they want. And there's a card called a handshake, I think, or something, that doubles the final score, whether it's positive or negative. So there's a lot of sort of push your luck with how many digs am I going to invest in, how many cards do I think I'm going to get, and then you want to put down – you end up discarding cards that maybe they can use, maybe they can't. So it's fun. It's very simple. There's a little bit of math to it. But really fun. Recommend it.
That would have fit in our set collection episode.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So this game originally came out in 99.
Yeah, I didn't say who was first version of it. The designer is apparently like this guy's made so many games.
Oh yeah, Reiner Knizia. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Published by Cosmos. And yeah, I think he's a German math teacher or something like that, but
he is a doctor.
He's a wizard. Okay.
He's a professor.
I briefly read up on him and I was immediately impressed.
He's a professor of board games.
Yeah, it was very good.
Anything
game.
With his name is amazing.
My only complaint is that the cards kind of suck. I was very quickly noticing floppy. The wear after only one play. And it sounds like a lot of people end up getting sleeves for this game in particular for that. So I may end up doing that. It's only it didn't look like it was much to get, but that was my only complaint. So cool. Apart from Everdell, which was already mentioned, that's it.
All right. Well, then, let's move on to the news, which is... before every episode... All of us trolling the internet may or may not come across interesting things and hopefully remember to talk about them, but this is the section we're going to do that. We don't have much today, but let's start with Adam again. Just let him keep talking.
So just one little thing I found vaguely related to this topic is I don't play a whole lot of board games digitally, but one that I do occasionally play and think is a very good version is the Root app. And that same company in 2022 is apparently making the Everdell app. Same kind of art style. I presume same good sort of publishing quality. Just something to look forward to if that's up your alley. Dire Wolf Digital is that company.
Yeah, the Root app is really cool, and they added a really cool soundtrack to it that fits really well.
Yeah, this music is really cool for a board game app. It's impressive.
Yeah, and it has this cool thing where if you're zoomed in, it's very dynamic, and you can see the 3D meeples and everything. But I also I play on my tablet, and when you zoom out all the way, it goes flat so that you can see everything better.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate the... being able to have it really pretty and dynamic or a more clear, just top-down view of everything.
It also does a good job as really following cool. the actions around as a thing is going. So yes. you don't have her trying to see what's going on. It zooms right in and follows as people are walking around and doing things.
Right. Yeah, and it shows you what the other players are doing really clearly, which is often a downside of these digital versions, I find. But speaking of digital versions, my friend Daryl and I often play Wingspan on the Switch. We started doing that when the pandemic started, and we've continued because it's a very good implementation, and Wingspan is one of the top games. And I'm excited because the European expansion is coming to the Switch soon. For whatever reason, developers like to neglect the Switch on this kind of thing, but doesn't look like they're doing that with Wingspan, so that's a happy day.
Nice.
Cool. Definitely worth checking out.
There's a couple other expansions. Are they planning on doing those or just...
I believe so, yeah. So the way Wingspan does it is each expansion is a different continent.
Right.
So in that game, you're basically collecting birds and they're all the cards are based on real birds. So the base game is North America. The first expansion is Europe. And then I believe there's Asia and Oceania. Are the other two expansions, and I think they're gonna release them all.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool. I think that's it for news.
I found nothing.
So, oh dear. All right. Our topic of this week is worker placement games. So I straight up copy and pasted from Board Game Geek because, you know. So their definition is players place tokens, typically the classic person-shaped meeple, to trigger an action from a set of actions available to all players, generally one at a time and in order. There's a whole bunch of these games, and like deck building, it's in a lot of games in a minor way. But ones I've played that I know have a good amount of it, slash what Board Game Geek listed as being... mainly worker placement, Viticulture, which we'll talk about, Everdell, which we'll also talk about, and then the other one I saw was Feast for Odin, which is a huge worker placement game. And by huge, I mean very long and big.
Huge!
Yeah.
I would like to play that one at some time.
Yeah.
I would too, but
so Adam,
it's
buy
very
it.
Expensive.
Yeah, Meej.
Yeah, Adam, buy it.
Either one.
I said you first. But yeah, let's just jump right in. Andrew, I see that you have Everdell down as your
My choice for worker placement. So Friday night, I played that with Adam and our friend Mark and his son Jason. And yeah, we had a great time playing that game again. It's definitely one of my favorite games from the last couple of years that that I've picked up. And worker placement isn't the entire game, but oh, don't worry, Matt, I see your face. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But yeah, worker placement is not the entire game, but it's a definitely a large component of it. Yeah, other than the worker placement, you're going to have hand management, and then you're kind of managing your tableau as you're placing your cards in front of you. You can only have 15 cards, but you're using worker placement to gather your resources and use your resources to play cards from your hand. And there's basically two different types of cards. You have critters and you have constructions. Now, the cool thing with this game is every critter has a construction pair. So if you build the construction first, later on in the game, if you happen to draw the critter card, you get to play that card for free if you've already played the construction, if you choose to do so. But yeah, you're using worker placement to gather your four different types of resources. There's sticks, and then there's resin, there's rocks, and there is berries. Berries are used exclusively for your building your critters or being able to play your critters because you need to feed your animals. And yeah, the rest of the resources are used to build your constructions, and then they'll rank from smaller things all the way up to bigger things that are worth more points, of course. And yeah, there's a bunch of different types of cards as well. Yeah, Adam, if you want to cut in for a sec too, just talk about your experience with it a little bit. Maybe we can just talk about the game a little bit instead of just jabbering on about how to play.
So I liked this game way more than I expected to. And I don't mean that as a dig. Like, I'm very aware of Everdell, and mm-hmm. I've considered it. I've watched videos, and I've seen it. For some reason, watching and learning about it didn't pique my interest a whole lot.
Okay.
But for whatever reason, playing it, like, it's been on my brain ever since. Like, I really, really liked it. I recently mm-hmm. just sold a big guitar amp, and I'm seriously considering going in for the complete with the money I just got from it.
Oh, nice.
After only one play, but... Cause that's yeah, that's still, by the way, you can
yeah,
still
the Kickstarter is still up, and you can buy the entire collection with all the expansions and stuff right now, because they just ran a Kickstarter for the next two expansions.
Oh, reprinting it?
Yeah, so you can get in for a complete reprint with a big box and everything that everything fits yeah. into nicely, oh. which is very tempting.
Does it still have the beautiful tree?
It does. In fact, in the Kickstarter, you can get a wooden version of the tree instead of the cardboard one.
Oh, I know. Yeah. So, just for everyone listening, the game came with this, I'd say, 2.5 foot tall tree that sits on the table.
Not that tall.
And
no, it's like a foot and a half.
2 foot? Okay, I'm exaggerating, but it's amazing.
Yeah.
And you use it to place tokens in different spaces that you use throughout the game, but a wooden tree would be...
I think the most important part are supposed to be does wooden. It not hold point cards that you can achieve throughout the game?
That is what it
does,
is, you're right.
And you can only view those cards from 180 degrees of the table.
Right. Correct. Yeah. Absolutely.
So
it needs to be on one end of the table for sure.
Right.
And then the guy sitting on the far end is a little bit out of luck for sure.
It's very impractical.
Sometimes the struggle
beautiful.
Is fun. That's how it goes.
Yeah.
But a few things that I don't quite know exactly why I liked it so much, but a few things that stand out as being pretty cool about it is there's four seasons, right? Four.
Mm-hmm.
And not everyone's in the same phase.
Usually.
Well, there's only three little markers on the top, so one's not.
Yeah, you start in winter and then proceed.
Yeah,
gotcha.
That's why I was confused. But so people aren't always playing in the same phase, so there's a kind of neat lag between what people are doing.
Mm-hmm.
But then maybe the thing I liked the most was how limited the worker placement was. You have to be very careful with where you put it because... that's mostly what you're doing to get resources, and then you want to try to do as much as possible without putting workers down. So,
right, because in addition to gaining resources, you're also going to need to place those workers to get you extra points. So if you wanted to claim a certain objective because you have met the criteria on your tableau in front of you, you still need to use one of your workers to claim that objective before somebody else does.
Yeah. So there's a lot of like, oh, I got like two guys left. Do I go into the next season and take all my guys back? And how do I achieve all these things with so little options? I really liked that part of the decision-making process. Mm-hmm. And then the theme of all the little critters and the pictures and all the art and everything is very, very charming.
Yeah, the art's really, really cute, and the components are great. I love how all the different resources have their own feel. They're all made out of different materials and stuff. And
I guess one of the expansions is adding pearls.
Yeah, that, I do have that expansion. Yeah.
Oh, that one's out already. Okay.
Yeah.
Another thing that piqued my interest on the Kickstarter while I'm on it is, I always like when the Root's doing the same thing, when they add something to enhance the 2-player version of a game.
Okay, yep.
Apparently Mistwood is supposed to do a lot for the 2-player, and I like when they add an expansion that's meant to address the sort of the game differences that can arise between different players. So
nice.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Really
that
liked
is
it.
Nice.
So we've alluded to it already, but Matt, you don't really like this game.
Oh, I love it. No,
you do.
I don't. No, and I've been trying to think of why I don't like it. I played it several times at your place.
Yep.
And I think I'm the opposite of what Adam was saying. Like, I expected to really like it. I like looking at the videos, the art, the production is beautiful. And then, I don't know, just through the gameplay, not knowing what everybody else is doing because there's so much going on in each tableau, but also not necessarily being able to plan to have the correct cards because it's pretty luck of the draw what you're drawing.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of randomness.
Yeah, you can mitigate that.
Determines
that.
What you know, for sure. It's still part of the game, right? You might not get the second part of your, you might get your construction, but you might not ever draw that critter, or somebody else already has it in their hand.
For sure. And I think probably the biggest drawback this game has is I'm not good at it. I think that's that's probably the worst part.
Right. And I think that would come with playing it a few more times for sure. Yeah. But
the only thing about that is I'd have to play it a few more times.
Right.
I'm kind of on the same page as Matt. I mean, I've only played it once, but I have this with most worker placement games, to be honest. I do not like when I can plan out my turn, I can play a game as much as possible, and then all of a sudden, because Adam decided to go to the same place as me, my entire plan is screwed up and I have to change everything. I don't like that aspect in games, and I find Everdell has that very strongly because
it's
so limited.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk about Viticulture later and it mitigates that slightly, but I find Everdell, it's you have to make the right decision quickly, I think.
Yeah, that is a strong point of all worker placements, I think. Or most of them, for sure.
Yeah, why I said I don't love them. All right. Cool. Well, that's Everdell. Matt, I see you've got something here to talk about, too.
Yeah, I borrowed Kalis from our good friend Mark, designed by William Attia and published by Starry Games in 2005, so it's an older one. I have played this one before, but it was years ago, so I borrowed it and then got sick. So Hannah and I got through about 5 rounds or so last night. And this one is often lauded as one of the first or most influential worker placement games. That's why I wanted to borrow it, because I always like to go back to the roots of whichever
of a mechanism. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that we're talking about, like Dominion for deck building, and Kalis is one of the first ones for worker placement. So players use worker placement to choose actions in order to gain resources or money, which they will use to help build other buildings, which you can then use in later turn actions, or to help build a castle for points. It's like you build a communal engine, but only one worker can be on a spot at a given time. So you'll take your worker and you'll pay a dollar, or as they call it in the game, a dernier. But I'm sure there's a French way to say that. You pay the dollar and you put it on a space, and That will go around and around the table until someone passes. So each player paying a dollar, putting a worker. Once you pass, then each other worker will have to pay one extra dollar. So you have to pay $2 to place a worker until someone else passes. And then you'll have to pay $3 until everybody has passed. Then you resolve the actions in order, starting at the beginning of the road that is on the board and going down the road and all the way to the end. In a linear fashion. So it's a very linear track that you're going down. And the only hitch is the provost, who is a nasty little man on the road, whom players can move throughout the course of the game. And none of the actions may be taken further down the road than he is. So you can take the action where he's on, but if you have chosen an action space after him, you can't actually do that action. So it's very... It can be a very mean game, depending on how Hannah feels that particular evening. To win the game, you need victory points, and the best way to do that is by building the castle. You can also gain favor with the king, building the castle and some of the buildings that you build as well. And favor will help you move along one of the four tracks on the top of the board that will give you bonuses like money, points, resources, or the ability to build... buildings cheaper in a one-off action. What I really like about worker placement games especially is the player interaction that inevitably comes out of them. And in Kalis, you can, like most worker placement, you can block spaces that your opponent might want, using the provost especially to stop them from doing actions that are further down the road than him, and then playing on each other's buildings. So when you build a building onto the road, you place your little wooden house there, and then if an opponent goes onto there and uses your spot, you'll get a point, and if you choose to use your own building, you'll get a dollar right away for that instead of a point. The original game, the art is ugly. Ugly? I don't know.
Yeah, it's pretty ugly.
I'm really sure that you can call any art ugly, but it's just a dour French white man, which seems to be a theme.
On that note, I do have a question about this. I'm having a hard time understanding what the theme of this game is. Like, is it one of those games where they found a mechanic that they wanted and just pasted it on a theme, or does it actually have a strong...
Oh, I'm sure you could... Like, I was talking to Hannah saying that I would probably prefer to play this game if it was in space. Because, I mean, I don't think there's any real tie-in. You're all master builders, and the king wants you to build the city of Kalis and the castle to glorify himself, I guess. So that's pretty much what you're doing. So you're stimulating the economy, building buildings, and then eventually to get the most points, you're making the castle. So that's the whole theme of it.
So it's an economy engine and it just happens to be building a castle.
Sure. Yeah.
This new box I'm looking at is pretty nice looking.
I looked that up. There's a new box for the original Kalis. But I cannot find a new board for it. Like, I didn't see that. The new box is...
It looks like the board's the same, yeah.
Yeah, the box is beautiful, but all they changed is the box, and who cares?
Oh, right. Yeah.
So what I did come across, is Kalis 1303 is kind of a reprint remake of Kalis, and it is a lot different. I watched a couple of YouTube videos on it. And if you can't find the original Kalis, maybe look into this one. It has different things like variable player powers at the start, which original Kalis does not have. The art is a lot better. It's a much prettier game. And it's actually available at like 401 Games or Miniature Market or whatever. I looked it up. You can actually get it. It is a lot different, though. Like, there's still the road. You're still worker placement. But it is different enough that you should not just buy it on spot. Definitely look into it. I've heard that it has a lot of its teeth removed, so it's not as fighty of a game, but the provost is still there. So, yeah, I don't know.
Is it the same designer?
I don't know.
Do you know?
I did not
That would...
Wow.
That would change, like, I know I've seen that before where they've reprinted games or redesigned games with slightly different designers, and oftentimes then it feels much different.
Yeah, Board Game Geek says it's William Attia again, so...
Mm. Okay. But that's good. That I would assume that means it's at least close to the original.
Well, it's very different in what I was looking at. Like, it has some of the, okay. the same bones, but skin and hair yeah. and teeth are different. That one was released in 2019, and the original was 2005. Looks way prettier. Much prettier for sure. And
hey, if it's pretty, it's worth
it. I think if I had the option, I would probably get this new one. If I could find the old one. So, I don't know. Take that for what it's worth.
Hmm. Cool. All right. We're going to move on to Viticulture. So Viticulture is a Stonemaier game in the realms of Scythe, Wingspan, Pendulum, whole bunch of really good games. It's designed by Jamie Stegmaier and Alan Stone. Viticulture was my introduction to worker placement. And I would say it's a very big game. It was one of the earlier Kickstarters as far as I'm aware. But it's a very good game. So, Viticulture, what are you doing? Well, you're a vintner, which is a person who makes wine, apparently, I learned. So the whole point of the game is that you're planting and growing grapes that you can turn into wine so that you can sell them. So how the game works is you have a board in the middle with all the different actions you can do. And it's split into two halves. So the one half is, I think it's the spring season, and the other half is the fall season. And you have a number of workers that you can use to decide what actions you're going to take. So in the spring, it's very much weighted towards planting your grapes, growing your grapes, harvesting your grapes, that kind of thing. The other half of the board is dedicated to making wine and shipping your wine and all that kind of stuff. What I really like about this, there's two really good mechanics that I think make this game fly for me. The first one is, I think you start it with five workers. Everyone starts on the spring side, and you use as many workers as you think you need, and use all the leftover ones when you get to the winter stage. So if you use all your workers on the spring side of the board, when you switch over to the winter phase, you have no workers left. So you really got to pay attention to, okay, what am I going to be doing next round, and what do I need to save for? Combined with that is, whoever decides that they're done in the spring phase first gets to choose if they're going to go first, second, third, fourth, etc. at the start of the winter phase. And they get a better bonus the lower in the turn order they go, or the later in the turn order, which is really cool. The other thing this game does is it gives you what they call a grande worker. It's essentially the same meeple, but it's like triple the size. And it can be used on any action spot that's already filled with other workers. So he basically just comes in and does his job anyways. He doesn't care how crowded it is, and it's amazing.
Big muscle boy.
Which is why I like this, because you always have that option to do your action if you absolutely need to. It just comes at a cost. So that's the base of the game. I think the other cool part of this game is aging your grapes. So it's not really worker placement, but I think it's really fun. So your grapes are based, you get cards, which have your grapes on them. You plant them. When you harvest them, you get to take these little transparent like pebble things and put them on the cellar part of your board over a little number that'll be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Every season, that number goes up to represent aging. So the longer you leave it, the more aged it gets, the more victory points you get. And then when you turn it into wine, the more expensive wines will need more aged grapes. So just some really cool mechanics that make you think in a slightly different way. Everything else about this game is just action spaces that let you build structures to make your vineyard essentially more efficient. I think that's... Yeah, the coolest thing to me is the whole, You have to split your workers over two seasons, and you get your Grande worker, which basically supersedes anything, which is fun. You guys have any thoughts on this?
I have not played this one.
I have, but it was a long time ago.
It's worth playing. I don't know if my explanation did it justice. There's a lot going on, but it's very fun. Yeah. So that's Viticulture.
It's rated less weighty than I expected based on what you just said.
Does that rating include the expansion? So,
I don't know.
So the Kickstarter originally was just the base game and the expansion came out later. I believe if you buy it now, it includes the expansion, which is Tuscany, I believe. It adds a lot of complexity to it. So they realized the base game was a little light and added that in, which was great.
Right. I mean, it's not light.
I forget exactly what it's at.
2.9.
I've only ever played it with Tuscany, so I don't quite remember what it adds.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, definitely worth checking out. Yeah. It's thinky, but still chill. All right. Let's move over to Adam. What have you brought for us this evening?
So I picked a game called Raiders of the North Sea by Shem Phillips. And it's a game that I kickstarted many years ago. It's a Vikings-themed worker placement. I like it a lot. I played it with Matt 2 weeks ago. So similar to Everdell, this one makes some restrictions for you to deal with. Basically, you're trying to raid villages like Vikings do. And to do so, you need to get crew and you need to get provisions and stuff. So on your turn, you're either working or raiding. And the neat part is you start on one side of the ocean, I guess. And there's only, I think, black workers. There's black, white, and gray meeples. And as you raid more advanced villages, you get the other types of meeples, and they do worse things for you at work, at home, but you get to do better raids with them on the other side. So you can both block what the other person might want to do at home and also pick up the meeple that they might want to take. So on your turn, this is something I like about most worker placements. It makes that part of the instructions pretty simple. Generally, when you put something down, it's obvious what the rules attached to that action are. So in this one, your turn is your, putting down your meeple and doing that thing, and then picking up another meeple and then doing that thing. So that's all you do on your entire turn. And the game ends when you've raided enough villages, and that's pretty much it. There's cool Viking art in your crew that you're building with the cards, and you spend them to do raids, and I think that's all I have to say about that one. Did you like this one, Matt?
Yeah, I actually really enjoyed this game. And definitely the parts that you said were the coolest parts. Like, you can look at the board state and see which actions don't have a meeple and which ones do, and you get to choose one of the ones that don't have a meeple and one of the ones that do have a meeple. But yep. As you kind of move up the board and to hopefully better resources or more victory points in your raiding, you get the gray or the white meeples, like you said, that do worse for you at home. And it's a very fun thing to decide, okay, do I want to do this lesser raid but still have this black meeple who will get me 5 coins back at home if I do that action? Or do I want to do the gray one who will get me 4 coins for the action back at home? That kind of thing. It is. Yeah. It was very interesting. I'd love to play that one again for sure.
I have the other one by him that was kickstarted at the same time that's all about ships. I forget what it's called. Shipwrights, I think. I've actually never played that one in my life.
I've heard of that one.
It's not usually rated as well as this one, but
Andrew,
yeah, I like
we
this
played
one, a lot.
One with a very similar art style at PAX Unplugged.
I'm just trying to figure it out. I don't think it was this game.
No,
because yeah, it was reminding me of the game we played at PAX, and we did not like the game at PAX. We didn't even finish it.
No, I remember that.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
Yeah, Matt kept saying that when we were playing it, but he couldn't remember what it was.
It definitely wasn't Raiders, because I actually enjoyed Raiders, but it might have been Shipwrights.
Yeah, whichever one we played was super...
really not like a game to bow out.
Well, I mean, we were at PAX Unplugged, where they had a very large library of games that you could just take one out, so we started playing the game, we weren't enjoying it, and we're like, we got other things that we could be doing, so...
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't believe it was this one. So, but it definitely made me think of that.
Yeah, I thought that same thing. I think the art style is.
You guys remember what it is? Definitely post it somewhere so we can see.
Yeah.
Be interested. I find it interesting to see. Oftentimes, artists have very specific styles, but it is interesting in board games how some artists cross over quite a bit. Whether that's because like Vikings has a very distinctive style, I don't know. Really interesting to me. All right, well, that is our topic. Let us know on Facebook, on Twitter, on our email, what you think of worker placement games, or if there's any you really love or really dislike. Really, we just want to hear what you have to say, because we like listening to people talk to us.
Send us stuff,
just like we like getting you to listen to us talk.
That's why we have three other hosts, so we can listen to more people talk to us.
It's true. Moving on to our next, we got a email, and I'm gonna let Matt take that away.
This email is from Randy, and she says, "Hey Turtles, listened to last Thursday's episode and had to chime in. Our e-index dividers, so this would be our out for a minute into Matt again. This is our episode on deck builders, where Andrew posed the question of whether to put your index cards before or after the subject that they are dividing. And Randy says, I literally learned about this in college. Shout out to the exec office admin program at Niagara College. Ha ha. And dividers go in front of the cards they apply to, just like in a binder.
Thank you for reading that laugh.
That's actually how she would laugh, too. So it's perfect.
It is.
She says, keep up the good work, Randy.
This is interesting. I just had this thought. I wonder if that depends what language you're like speaking. Because there's languages that go right to left, correct?
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
I think Hebrew does, and some Asian languages. So I wonder if they would do their dividers opposite of us, which is why some games have it.
We'll have to send Randy to one of their office admin
classes. Because, Andrew, the game you were asking about was Heart of Crowns, right? Which I would assume is...
Yeah, I think so. My main question was just the fact that when you pull all of the cards out, then you got the one index card right up against the other index card, so you can't see the one behind it.
So complicated.
Mm.
Well, cool. Thanks for that, Randy. Yeah, guys, send us what you have to say. Correct us. And yeah, we love corrections. Moving along, this week, Adam put in the effort and got us up on Apple Podcasts. So that's pretty exciting.
Yay!
And we got an iTunes... We got an iTunes review. Exciting.
Our first one?
From Jay Wilpstra. Yeah, Jay Wilpstra. 5 stars.
Wow.
Oh, count them.
I mean, if it wasn't 5, we wouldn't be reading it. Just,
if it's really funny and it's not 5, we might read it.
I think some...
Not having a ton of time...
Oh no.
No, go ahead,
Matt. Of the best reviews online ever are 2-star reviews.
Yeah,
they are some of the best.
Hilarious.
They're obviously terrible, but there must be something redeeming in there that you don't get 1 star. Well, they're the best.
Yeah.
And they had to actually think about what they're doing instead of just giving it a 1.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
thought, no, I'm going to give it a 2.
For sure.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to read this one. Not having a ton of time to try many games, the insight and suggestions just in these first few episodes have been priceless. Some great new suggestions as well as in-depth explanations of various game concepts, all while you can tell these guys are having an awesome time chatting with each other.
She can tell.
We got a space. Wow. Sorry, threw me off. Yeah, so please, guys, leave reviews on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. Oh, I listened to too many podcasts. I felt like
thank you, Jim Webster.
They really helped my ego. which needs help, you guys.
Yeah, they do. So we've done our best to publish this podcast on as many platforms as we can. If there's a platform that you use that you want us to try to publish on, shoot us an email and we'll see what we can do. No promises, but we will do our best. And with that, thanks for listening. Please leave us a review on iTunes or Google or whatever you feel like using. And if it's funny or five star, we'll read it. Feel free to contact us on the interwebs. If you have any questions, you can email theturnturtles@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at turnturtlesbg. And be sure to tune in every other Thursday for a new episode of the Turn Turtles Board Gaming Podcast.
Happy New Year!
Bye!
Bye!
Happy New Year! Happy New Year!